I would like to call to order this meeting of the House Resources Committee at 2:05 p.m. Today is Monday, March 20th, 2017. Members present are Representative Parrish, Representative Drummond, Vice Chair Westlake, myself, Co-Chair Josephson, and Co-Chair Tarr. Please let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Assisting us today is our Recording Secretary Deborah Tillinghast and our LIO moderators. Today we will be hearing my House Bill 105 in the Denali Wolf Buffer Zone and hearing for the first time another bill, House Bill 134 on Board of Game Membership. For House Bill 134, I will be giving a presentation and Vice Chair Dean Westlake will chair the committee. Our co-chair is required to be in finance and our schedule for the record has been delayed because of a House floor debate. For House Bill 105, I've distributed to members a committee substitute, version O, and I'd ask if there's a motion to adopt version O.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we adopt as the working document for the Resources Committee committee substitute for House Bill 105, 30-LS0408/O.
Thank you. Any objection to the motion to adopt as our working document version O of House Bill 105? Hearing none, that bill is that version is before us. There was a fiscal note from DNR on the original version of House Bill 105, but my understanding is that this version will generate, that is, version O, the one before us, may generate a fiscal note from the Department of Public Safety, Wildlife Troopers Division, with minimal impact, and possibly a fiscal note, I assume, from Department of Fish and Game with zero impact. And we'll explain why that may be so in a moment. We have the drafter, or we had the drafter. At one point, we can get him or her again. It's a him from Legislative Legal Services, and I believe someone from Fish and Game Online. Although I'm told that they are actually meeting before the Board of Game now. At least Mr. Dale is, who's the director of Wildlife, I think. I've distributed to members a summary of changes, and I'd ask my aide Megan Rowe to come forward and explain those changes now. So she'll do that. We will discuss those changes. And I do want the record to reflect that I made during committee announcements, I indicated that at adjournment of the floor session, which was certainly over 15 minutes ago, that we would convene in 15 minutes. So I just want the record to reflect that. So, Ms. Rowe, if you'll put your name on the record.
Hello, my name is Megan Rowe. The summary of changes between the original version of HB 105 and this version is that in the original we created what was called the Denali Wolf Special Management Area, and the title in which it was drafted was one that was administered by DNR, and DNR does not have the purview to manage wildlife, and so we had it redrafted within a section we had it redrafted just as a closure of an area. And so we investigated some different areas, like refuges and sanctuaries, but we heard from the administration that the best and the cheapest way to effectuate the intent of the bill, which is to protect wolves near Denali, was to just close the area. So that's what we've done. We took the same geographic description and just said it is prohibited trapping and hunting in wolves in that area.
Thank you. Any questions for my aide and committee aide, Megan Rowe? Seeing and hearing none, let me describe just a few things. We met on this bill on February the 10th and February the 15th. We had public testimony, which we still have. So what I think I will do is open up public testimony. And I see two individuals, and one of them, I believe, Mr. Barrett, has already testified. And he can certainly tell us if he hasn't, but I have a strong memory of him testifying. So I'm going to go to Doug McIntosh in Fairbanks. Mr. McIntosh, are you there? Mr. McIntosh.
Would you say again?
I'm looking for a Douglas McIntosh.
Right here.
Oh, Mr. McIntosh, can you give us your name for the record, and then you are a person who can testify on this bill.
My name is Douglas McIntosh. I've lived in Fairbanks for 46 years.
All right. You have the floor, sir.
I shall be short. I am wholeheartedly in favor of the Bill 105. Let me say exactly what I like. The purpose of the bill remains to protect bulls for future generations of Alaskan residents and visitors and to bolster the economy of the state's most important tourism asset through statistically viable wolf. Thank you. One of the reasons I came to Alaska 46 years ago were that I hope to see wild animals in a natural environment living free as God created them. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. McIntosh? Seeing and hearing none, I will now ask Mr. Barrett a single question. Mr. Barrett, if you're there, am I right that you testified on House Bill 105?
Mr. Chairman, you're exactly correct.
Okay. Then I'm going to close public testimony. And actually, Mr. Barrett, do you have any comments about the fact that the bill moves from a special management area under DNR to a closure with no specific designation? Do you have any comments on that change?
I have no comments, Mr. Chairman.
All right. I'm going to close public testimony. The bill is back before us, and I wanted to just make a couple comments. I said that the bill was before us on February 10th and 15th. I then listened to the first half of the testimony from February 10th, and I noted a number of questions from members of this committee. For example, Representative Tallarico noted that there are private lands held, which should come as no surprise to anybody. He noted 6,000 acres of railroad reserve, a Tri-Valley subdivision, university property, etc. And there were also some concerns about the previous version of the bill, which the record should reflect we've been joined a few minutes ago by Representative Birch and now by Representative Tallarico and Johnson. There were a few questions about the bill and whether the narrative which said wolves come before all other things in this buffer zone would mean just that. And to dispense with those, I think, legitimate questions, what we have in version O is a simple closure. And I believe that there are 37 areas that are presently closed to hunting or trapping on the ADFNG website at the present time. And I wanted to make some record about the closure concept. There is a provision which in the Constitution about special and local legislation. However, the case law and a general prohibition on that. However, the case law says that if something is of statewide importance and applies in a local way, it may not necessarily be prohibited. And that if there is a unique purpose that is achieved through an act that applies only to a specific area, that could be, that is a legitimate state purpose, that could, that, and by the way, the test is there a fair and substantial relationship between the bill and the purpose to achieve, the purpose to be achieved, then the prohibition on local or special legislation can be overcome. And what we heard on February 10th, for example, is that there are 650,000 visitors to Denali Park every year, that in spending and salaries, there is over $800 million spent at Denali Park, and that there were a handful, some people believe as few as three trappers, that were impacting the ability, and this was an arguable point, but there was evidence, I think, that a reasonable person could rely on, that they were impacting the ability of people to see wolves in the park. And there was some, again, arguably, a contestable point, but there was some, that the decline in numbers of wolves, which has rebounded some, parallels or roughly parallels the period when the state of Alaska and the department and the Board of Game removed the buffer in question. Or at least a buffer of a similar size in a similar location near the Stampede Trail and east of the George Parks Highway. So those are my comments. Are there any further comments about version O? Yes, Representative Birch.
We're kind of looking for summary comments on
sure.
The,
that's where we are.
I'm a no vote on this. I've actually lived and worked in this area. I worked at the Stampede Mine in the late 60s. I knew Earl Pilgrim, who was there trying to start the project up and a project up there for antimony, stibnite ore that is mined there. I'm familiar with the area. Many years later, we actually traveled into this area. In the late 70s, right after the land was, the general area was set aside under the Antiquities Act by former President Carter. So I'm very familiar with the area. I'm concerned that what we've got here is a solution in search of a problem. We actually had testimony, as I recall, from I can't remember the gentleman's name, with Fish and Game, indicating that the wolf population in the park is kind of ebbs and flows, actually with the game that's available for them and what they thrive on, and that has a far greater impact on the population than anything else. So I think that we've got enough park lands in the state, we've got enough reserve lands in the state. I think we need to be looking at how we can better utilize the lands that we have available to us, and not setting aside properties. Notwithstanding that, I think we're in the all or part of this is in the Denali Borough, and I would certainly look to them for some leadership from the vis-a-vis the trapping aspect. But I will be a no vote on this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other comments from the committee? Representative Teller.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize for coming in late, but this is just for adoption of the CS or adoption of the bill.
It is for adoption. There's not yet been there is an objection. It's Representative Birch's. I'll treat that as an objection. So this is for the question of whether the bill should move from committee.
Oh, okay.
We have an adoption O before us.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, we did adopt version O as the one under consideration, but a motion has not been made to move the bill from committee at this time.
Okay. I'm correct, and she's quite correct. But what you may have missed, Representative Tallarico, is that version O creates a closure and no other designation. That's what version O does. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm intimately familiar with this area, as you had probably guessed. So for everyone's information, I won't be supporting this either. A lot of it from, believe it or not, personal experience this fall, moose hunting. And if I look at the map and I see the actual area that's suggested, in particularly the east side of the Nenana River, where the boundary goes, I wouldn't know how to describe it other than the fact that it's absolutely crawling with wolves. I think there's a portion of the packs that were in the Stampede area that probably have drifted over due to the high moose population on that side of the river. They're incredibly efficient predators. I have no problem with that. They follow the food source, and they stay with their food source. From a personal experience, and I'm certainly not a biologist and just an outdoors person, that's the pack that's in the Totatlanica is the largest wolf pack that I could even imagine or have ever seen. My assumption is that, and like I say, I'm not a biologist, my assumption is it's near to the point where it's going to split soon. It pretty much has to, because they can't support over 30 animals you know, traveling in groups that large. And one other thing that I think is interesting, I did have the opportunity to talk to a long-term bus driver in Denali National Park just to see what was, because years ago we never saw a wolf in the park when the population was really good, and then for quite a few years they saw wolves in the park and then they didn't see a wolf. And just one of the simple things he told me, well, he said, because they chose to den near the road for a particular time. And they denned right near the road, and once that denning had moved, then it was back to normal, where you just see one every once in a while. I've certainly had a lot of experience in and out of the park. I don't travel in and out of there like bus drivers, no question about that. I would mention, with my previous experience with the Denali Borough, this issue had come up in front of the Denali Borough when I was actually the mayor of the borough, and we went through a process. There was actually a draft ordinance that was in place, and it didn't go anywhere. The ordinance died. So just so the committee has that information. But thank you for the opportunity to speak to that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Tallarico. Any other comments? Representative Johnson.
I really wasn't going to say anything, but I just, after listening to my colleague from the area, I thought it makes a lot of sense for me listening to the person that lives in the area and has been responsive to the people in that area for a long time. As we went through the discussion on this bill, I felt like there were some sentimental reasons for maybe establishing this area. There's a wolf pack that sounds like it was very near and dear, well researched, very well, very much part of people's knowledge and being in many ways. But unfortunately, through certain circumstances, those wolves were, at least one of them's been killed. It was like a major piece of that pack, and you just can't go back and fix it as much as you'd like to. And so for that reason, it feels to me like that this bill is trying to address a specific wolf pack and not the general wolf areas around the park. And I think that one is just as valuable to be seen in the park as the other, as much as we're all saddened by the loss of having well-researched animals going away. And so, you know, for that reason, I will be a no vote on this bill.
All right. Representative Rauscher.
Thank you. Through the chair, the last time, I think, when we discussed this, I read from an article who was a lady who actually was involved, and she was involved with scientific information, studies, data. She also reported, and I remember reading, I don't apparently have it with me today, I apologize, how Governor Mills at the time said that a science needs to be included when you start playing with the idea of allowing predators or other creatures in the wild to anyway, so I guess planning a wolf there, I don't see the wolf wanting to stay around. I know we're not doing that, but I'm just saying if we were to, without a food source, I think it's much less. The representative from the area had said that without a food source, you're not going to be able to keep it there. I'm not sure that trapping is all of the problem of why there's no wolf there to be viewed. And that's probably the biggest thing for me. I guess I'm having a hard time with writing a law so that maybe something will exist to be viewed. I don't, there's something wrong in that. I just don't understand the science behind that. I wish I could, because I know there's a loss, and I know there's some sort of a that there, but I know we're not planting an animal there, but I don't think this law will create a viewing, a wolf to be viewed. And it just seems to me that this is part of what we're trying to do here, is allow wolves to be viewed by not trapping them anymore. I'm not sure that this will work. I'm not sure there's enough science behind it to prove that this is something that that a moral will help. I appreciate your work here. I appreciate your care for nature, wildlife. I just think that there's a science that involves here, and there might be more than a reason of just a wolf trapped out of the area that may have caused those wolves to move on to a food source somewhere, and I'm not sure that this law will help change that. And I apologize, too, but I would be a no vote in this.
Thank you. Representative Parrish.
I can't tell you how much I'm heartened to hear science referenced so often and with such deference. I've got a degree in biology myself. I've made some small study of populations. And I also come from a tourist town. So when I see in the resolution from the North Star Borough that when the area was closed to trapping, 49% of visitors saw wolves. And over the last 3 years, it's only 4%, an all-time low. And the population has been decreased in that time to about a third of what it was. I can't help but to think that for the residents of that area, and for everyone who will make a trip to Denali, it could be a major economic factor in years going forward. I know that the value of an individual humpback whale has been assessed and in terms of generating additional tourist revenues. And I can tell you they're not cheap. And I would bet that the value to the state overall from a single individual wolf in that area is very considerable. I'll keep my remarks brief, but in short, I think that it's economically wise to set aside a certain area. All nature asks of us is space, just a space to exist. And it provides such incredible dividends. If you've got a pure stream of water, you get salmon. If you've got a area of wilderness, you get all sorts of wonderful economic drivers, foods for subsistence, and yes, for other sorts of harvest, but also the non-consumptive use, the additional tourist dollar. And to the loss of the data set, that really is a tragedy. Having a long, decades-long data set is really a rare and precious thing. I'll end there.
Thank you. Co-Chair Turr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate Representative Parrish's comments because I think that's in large part what is drawing me to supporting the legislation today. I think, you know, we know that there's more than 500,000 visitors every year to Denali, and right now with our fiscal situation, you know, we're looking towards the industries that we know are sustainable and have growth potential, and our tourism industry is certainly one of those, and I hope that those, you know, folks as they come to Denali for that experience, you know, stick around and spend a lot more money while they're here. And so I think, you know, in these times, those visitors and our tourism industry are so important. We know it's our number three industry right now. And I go back to the National Geographic article, and I think, you know, there's just a bit of an image problem here. In that the individual who it seems, you know, this Mr. Wallace, who has since 1999 shot a collared alpha female, then in 2012 dragged a horse carcass to a site where wolves were active and set up traps. He trapped a pregnant female belonging to the East Fork pack. That was reported in the Los Angeles Times. That same year, he also caught the only remaining breeding female in the Grant Creek pack, and that led to, you know, the pack consequently produced no pups and fell from 15 to 3. And in response to this, his comment was, "This was the third time I ruined millions of people's Denali National Park viewing experience." And I think this one individual, unfortunately, is having, you know, a much greater impact you know, than one person really should, and almost sort of speaks of it, you know, with pride that's taken place. Now, I'm not anti-hunting or anti-trapping at all, but it seems it's sort of become a sport for this individual to go just adjacent to the park boundary and, you know, use a horse carcass or other means to bait the wolf and then trap it. And he does so knowing, you know, that the impact is that it will ruin millions of people's Denali visitors' experience. So that is not, I think, a good image for Alaska, unfortunately. And when it's found in, you know, national publications, then unfortunately gives us sort of this black eye, if you will. And so, you know, I think right now this is the right move. We need to see if this is something that can work. You know, this may be something that needs to be revisited in the future. And so, you know, I think we should be in contact with the park managers and know exactly what the impact of this intervention is. And, you know, if it doesn't work, we should consider something else. But right now, I think this is the right move, and I support your legislation.
Vice Chair Wesley.
Thank you. Through the chair. For me, it's a difficult thing. I think what it is, I've always viewed wolves as a biological resource, whether this time of year when their skin is worth a lot of money, or else when I'm out kayaking every fall and I see more than two wolves. I think I've seen too many. I know what they can do. They're very efficient. However, I'm feeling better that if we're going to be doing something like this, I'm looking at it from a for what it is, a biological resource. Whether it's to put money in my wallet in me personally handling this, or if it's going to put money in the wallet of Alaska when you have $800 million coming into the Denali. So I think for me, I'm conflicted, but knowing that it's only half the battle won, in that you're only doing it on the visitor side, if you will, it makes sense to me. I want to see the money coming in, so it's a tough call for all of us. It really is. But like Chair Tara said, is you want Alaska to be exciting for everyone. And you see a moose, it's yay. You see a wolf, and you all jazzed up. And for me, it translates into dollars for the economy. Someone's got great stories to tell their kids, so I'll support it. It's just one of those really tough decisions.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the all the previous comments. I most appreciate Representative Tarr's reference to the LA Times article from where thousands of our tourists emanate. I would much prefer to be in the LA Times as working to protect these wolves and increase their numbers rather than aerial spotting of wolves by fish and game and gassing of cubs in their dens and all those other kinds of things that we're also unfortunately well known for. So I will be in support of this. The wolves have no regard for boundaries, but we do, and if we don't do this, we'll never know if it works. We can always reverse ourselves at some point in the future, but at this point in time, I think it would be smart of us to respect the science and help the wolves rebound so that we can continue to attract visitors.
Thank you, Representative Drummond.
Thank you.
At this time, I would entertain a motion for CS to HB 105, version O.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move House Bill 105, Committee Substitute for House Bill 105, 30-LS0408/O, with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations from committee.
Is there an objection?
I'll object, Mr. Chairman.
There's an objection. Ms. Tillinghast, will you call the roll, please?
Representative
Boucher?
No.
Representative
Tallarico?
No.
Representative
Westlake?
Yes.
Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Representative Parrish?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Tarr?
Yes. So with that, CSHB 105 version O moves from committee. We will take an at ease with attached fiscal notes and sign the paperwork.
Okay, be right back.
to order. It is now 2:39, let's call it 39, p.m. on Monday, March 20th. I'm Vice Chair Westlake, and we are continuing our hearing today with House Bill 134 of Board of Game Memberships. Will the sponsor, Representative Josephson, please, with your staff, tell us what this is about.
Thank you. I'll call you Mr. Chair because you are the chair for this meeting, of course. Mr. Chair and Natural Resources Committee, what you have before you is House Bill 134. And some of you may have, if you haven't connected the dots at this point and seen that I have some concerns with the way the Board of Game operates, then I would be surprised. And what this bill does is something, and by the way, I've had a comparable bill now for 5 years. This is the first time that I've had a hearing on the bill. What this bill does is it says in this seven-member board that there will be a tourism seat and there will be a non-consumptive seat. Now, first let me say that whoever is currently appointed and unconfirmed, or appointed and confirmed, would not be impacted by this bill. The bill very clearly says that these seats would be filled in the future, essentially. And the reason why I think this bill is very, very important and it is the following. I'm told, and I could probably confirm this by Fish and Game, and even if it's widely off, say 10% off, it's still a sort of remarkable number. I'm told that perhaps 85% of Alaskans don't hunt and trap. I'd be very surprised if that number applied to their fishing predilections as well. I assume more than I assume that most people fish, let's just put it that way. But I can tell you, and by the way, we are in the previous bill, which was House Bill 105, and you will be receiving, because I just received this myself, about 230 letters, emails really, expressing concern with the Board of Game not hearing from non-consumptive users. And what we find in the Board of Game is that in the 90s, you had members like Joel Bennett and Vic Van Ballenberg and Tom Meacham who were willing to hear and entertain and take seriously the interests of non-consumptive users. And, in fact, former Senator Ellis, if he hadn't filed it, he certainly considered filing a bill that would have created a Board of Wildlife. And I don't really know, I'd have to figure out how his bill would have worked. But fundamentally, what you see is, for example, on the question that was just raised in House Bill 105 and whether or not Denali's wolves needed further protection, you see a Board of Game that has become so politicized that if a person were, for example,
Mr. Chair, you know, without someone here from the Board of Game to really speak to things, I think we should be a little bit careful about how we talk about the makeup of the Board of Game.
Fair enough. Thank you. If, for example, one of the nominees that will be asking us to confirm him or her, because there's a woman nominee as well, Miss Linnell of the Copper Center area, if they were to, in their confirmation hearing, indicate in the slightest way that they cared about the Wildlife Watcher, their nomination would likely, I mean, I can't say unequivocally, but my experience is their nomination would be sunk. It would be very difficult. Word would just move through this building faster than the speed of light that they'd shown any sensitivity to the 85% of Alaskans that like looking at wildlife. That is sort of a death knell. Now, it didn't used to be. In the 90s, there was a culture in the Board of Game that was more accepting of that. But we're going to hear testimony today, and I think Ms. Mitchell will be available, that is not the culture now. And Ms. Mitchell is the same Ms. Mitchell who brought the, successfully so far, the Traps Near Trails measure in the Mat-Su Valley. And then we also have the testimony of Vic Van Ballenberg. But fundamentally, let's say this bill passed. What would happen? Well, you would have more dialogue reflecting more diversity before the board. And you would have an avenue for people who share different values to be heard. But presently, instead, this committee just moved out a bill to help protect Denali wolves. The Board of Game last month essentially took a comparable proposal and defeated it 7-0. Here, that measure passed 5-4. That's telling. And I think that my concern with the way the current statute, 1605.221, is written, which identifies who would serve on Board of Fisheries and Game, is it says the following. May I just quote this, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Quote, the governor shall appoint each member on the basis of interest in public affairs, good judgment, knowledge, and ability in the field of action of the board. And here's what I think is important. And with a view to providing diversity of interest and points of view in the membership, close quote. I'm not suggesting that there isn't diversity of views. There are. I'm sure many of you are familiar with the divide between the hunting community itself and those who support the residential hunters, depending, and I'm using that term with capital letters, this group called residential hunters, and those supporting interests that may come from out of state. So there, it's not that the hunting community or the trapping community is monolithic. It just isn't. It's much more nuanced than that. So there is diversity. But there's this huge swath of society that's apparently 85% of the Alaska residents that has essentially no voice on the Board of Game. And so my bill says, what would be wrong with those who are concerned with watchable wildlife, frankly, in the end, losing most proposals 5-2? So let me describe what I'm saying. For the non-consumptive or tourism seat, it could be a sort of difficult experience. I mean, they're going to be having a hard time convincing the other five, often. And you'll see from one of my witnesses that there's some truth to what I say. They're going to be having a hard time convincing them that, no, we don't need to do predator control in Unit 16 because there's important bear viewing going on there. They're generally going to lose those struggles 5-2. But at least they'll have a voice. And that is very important to the people of Alaska. Because I know that many people won't attend the Board of Game meetings because they view it as an exercise that is, frankly, from their vantage point, sort of hopeless. And all I'm saying is they're Alaskans. And let's infuse Title 16 as written with more delineation and more description so that we can have real diversity. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions to the presenter? Representative Rocher.
Thank you, Chairman Wesley, through the chair. Representative Josephson, right now, do you know, I think it's my belief, and I don't know enough about what I understand, but this would be defining two seats. They would be the only defined two seats on the board now. In other words, if you understand what I'm saying, in other words, it doesn't say fisherman, it doesn't say settler, it doesn't say moose hunter, it doesn't say caribou hunter, it doesn't say, these will be the only two actually defined types of seats, is that correct?
That is correct. But my answer to that is, that's what this has come to. I mean, the other five will surely represent the consumptive users. And by the way, I don't have any particular problem with that. I mean, I suppose one could argue that there should be a little more parity, sort of a 4-3 kind of thing. But I don't have any problem. Of course there should be a large and strong and ardent voice for consumptive users. Because number one, they know a lot about allocation, and many of them know a lot about biology and what it takes to harvest wildlife. So I want that expertise. They reflect Alaska in all its abundance. But this other cohort is absolutely cut out of the process. I'm talking cut out. They have no voice on that board. Period. I mean, if they do, I'd be happy to hear about it. I couldn't tell you the last time the Board of Game. I mean, I mentioned this in a previous hearing. I like to look at bears, and I've been to McNeil River, big game sanctuary.
Representative Rusher, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's basically, thank you, Chairman, through the chair. I understand, and I think we're in agreement there. But I'm just trying to put this together in my head. It seems like we're kind of creating two seats of equal value as opposed to the others. It's just in my mind. I haven't penciled it all out yet. So that's a comment more than a question. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it seems to me like this is one of those things where you start getting government, we start trying to define exactly what we want the board to do and what decisions do we want it to make and what we want the outcome of the votes to be. And so we set up the board so it has certain types of voting on it. I guess from my perspective, this is the governor gets to appoint and the legislature gets to confirm. And every single time that we don't like the makeup of the board, we have an option of voting that down and making, you know, having the governor reappoint someone else. So to me, we already have the option of saying we want a certain makeup on the board. We don't have it set in statute that we're going to have this one and that one, but it allows for everyone to be represented when they vote on, everyone in the state gets to have a voice through the representatives when they vote on the makeup of the board. And I think as the makeup of Alaska changes, we may have changes on the way the Board of Game is, on how the seats turn out being applied. But as far as needing to define seat by seat, I think it just binds the hands of the governor. I think it binds the hands of us as a legislature to really represent our people.
Well, and if I could just comment on that, I'm saying that it's in the interest, all of the, virtually everything we do in this building is a policy call. And I'm saying it's in the interest of the legislature and the people of Alaska to be so bound, to be bound by this. And I would note that there's nothing atypical about a board saying there will be X number of, pedicurists and Y number of hairdressers. This is very typical. And believe me, what I'm doing is merely giving an audience to some ideas that invariably, 9 times out of 10, will fail. But the members of the public will say, I had a voice, and I couldn't attend that meeting, but someone who sees the world approximately the way I do did. And they tried, and they raised some sensitivities and some concerns that never would have been raised otherwise.
Okay. Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Chairman Westlake. And through the chair, I want to preface my comment now that I don't know whether you know it or not, but I actually won three prizes at the fair in Palmer for photography all in the same year, and then I've won some other years, and wildlife was basically their, was, I don't know if they knew that or not, but so I do appreciate wildlife, and I do appreciate being able to photograph it, and I also appreciate the fact that you're interested in being able to see and view and take photos of, and that there should be a voice out there of some sort in your understanding. And I I commend your idea somewhat, but I do know that the Constitution of Alaska mandates that wildlife be managed on a maximum benefit of its people on the sustained yield principle. I'm just trying to figure out how this works together.
Well, and so my response to that is that that's, in a narrow vote a few moments ago, that's what this body did. It said there's an economic interest in living animals, and that that was a reflection of the maximum benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think there's anything about saying there's going to be a tourism seat and a non-consumptive seat that runs counter to that constitutional mandate. There's nothing that does that. That's my view.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. Representative Burge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, fish and game is they're a renewable resource. They're managed, have been managed, effectively one way or another since statehood. I guess I find myself concerned by having folks on the Board of Game who don't have some interest in the sustainable use and consumption of that resource. And I look at the Board of Fisheries. I mean, I guess the question would be, do we have an analogous situation with the Board of Fisheries where you'd have, say, somebody on there that is, objects to fishing in one manner or another? It seems counterintuitive to me to have somebody on the board. It'd be like the Board of Regents for the university having somebody that, doesn't think kids ought to go to university. They ought to just, have a different path. But maybe if you could explain that, how would you, do you see an analogy with the Board of Fisheries, for instance, where we'd have a non-fisheries person engaged?
Well, through the chair, and I apologize, I'm supposed to have been saying that, and I should know that rule. Through the chair, Representative Birch, no, and partly because we don't see fish the way we see wildlife. So that's the main difference. But, it's an interesting question, and there have been some concerns in the present administration, and I don't mean to take on the present administration, but that, for example, the new EPA director isn't as concerned with environmental protection, and so why is he working for that department? And I only think about that because I think about the idea that the Board of Game members should be about the consumptive use only, and so why would it be appropriate that someone who's non-consumptive would be the right fit. I think that it's my concern and my experience, and I don't go to every Board of Game meeting. I really don't, but I've been to a number of them. Is that generally when there's a proposal to conserve rather than take, the proposal to conserve is generally defeated. Now, it's not necessarily defeated if it's if there's some concern about, I think, what is, it's true, let me rephrase. It's true that the Board of Game certainly has concerns with sustainability, but where they react viscerally, in my opinion, is if somebody has a proposal which they red flag and identify as being just in the interest of wildlife watching. That's a sentimentality that doesn't go over well. And I think that it should. I think it should receive a voice. Because if for another reason than the economic interest in tourism.
In my years, certainly with the electric utility and so forth, again through the chair, I've run into people who are incredibly impassioned about alternative energy, wind farms and solar and so forth, but I don't think they make a good fit on the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Good people, well intentioned, but I think Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission is looking at, you know, trying to reasonably manage and produce and advantage Alaskans with their oil and gas resources. You know, a person that is all about non-renewables or all about, you know, wind farms and so forth, I just don't see where that'd be a good fit. And I the analogy to me is consistent in that I don't see how somebody that is opposed to, you know, fishing and hunting, or hunting in this case, or trapping or whatever, I don't see how they'd be a good fit on a board that's primarily constructed to efficiently manage and maintain that game resource that we all collectively own. It doesn't appear like a good fit to me.
And through the chair, I think you make an interesting point. And I think what you might find if this bill were to become law is that the non-consumptive seat holder, or the tourism seat holder, surely would not be bound to look at the issue in one from one perspective or another. And there may be cause where, for example, you know, I'm going to guess, I don't know much about the Yukon Charlie wild and scenic rivers. I've not been there. I've been near there. I've been there. I'm going to guess that there aren't scads of tourists there. And so it could be that the tourism seat, for example, might say, I'm a dedicated tourism seat, but there isn't much interest in the tourism industry here. And the proposal, as described, is sustainable. And yes, you know, X number more wolverines can be taken there in a sustainable way. And they would cast a vote in that with that regard.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Travel Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess, Representative Josephson, you kind of said that, and I know you don't have the hard numbers. You're probably pretty close. Maybe 85% of the residents of the state of Alaska may not purchase a hunting license. I really don't know what the numbers are either. Is the assumption that all 85% of those folks are necessarily anti-hunting, or
through the chair? I think the answer is no. I think that the cohort that I'm talking about views some of the practices that are allowed in state law, some of the practices Representative Drummond noted in the previous hearing, as absolutely abhorrent and not part of the North American model and not fair chase and not sporting. And they want some concern for intact ecosystems, and they want an Alaska that remains wild rather than a place that is all about abundance and nothing else. And there's nothing in what I just said that would preclude some responsible and sustainable hunting.
And we're going to follow up and with Representative Calarico. We've got Representative Johnson next, and then Representative Parrish. However, this room has already been pre-reserved for 3:15, and we may have to put these on the table for now. In the meanwhile, let's go with what we have, and Representative Calarico, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I guess, Representative Josephson, so you and I probably have different understandings of the Board of Game, because I've been involved in, a game board meeting where they had 213 proposals. And I'll just say, and I don't know if you'd agree with me or not, but I've seen activity where the board actually takes allocation considerations and data from the department and actually structures seasons or closures or openings, or say, for example, a big one that happened in my area were antler restrictions. They took numbers and allocations and created a set of antler restrictions so that they could have that maximum yield of that particular resource, but continue on, not just to go out and say, well, we're not going to do anything, just shoot anything that's got antlers and you're fine. So they came up with the antler restrictions. They actually changed them twice. They had a 36-inch three-brow tine rule. They weren't completely happy with that, so they went to a 50-inch four-brow tine rule. I don't know what that means to everybody. It means a lot to me. But I'll admit, I'm a consumptive user. There's no question about it. a reasonably aggressive consumptive user of the resource. But wouldn't you say, you know, we've got the governor who has the ability to choose people of whatever background. I don't know how to say it other than sometimes it's good to be king. You get to put names forward for that and everything in the diversity. But would you say that occasionally the board has made decisions that are actually based on the allocation and the data that's presented and to manage the resource? I think I've seen them take action to manage the resource correctly for the advantage to the people of Alaska. I guess that's all I'm saying.
Through the chair, I mean, my answer is yes. And I think I've been unfair to the Board of Game in that respect in my comments. So I do think that they have followed, first of all, their own knowledge and experience, the recommendations of the department and its biologists, the testimony. So they have made, I think, some good decisions about methods and means. But they are truly dismissive, and our the data that we'll hear from eventually, 95% of the time, about any non-consumptive sort of view of the world, and generally those views are not way off, as I described with the Yukon Charlie. They're not way off the beaten path. They can be in places where other interests of Alaskans should be considered. And that's been my
thank you, Madam President.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm just having a hard time wrapping my mind around this because growing up, I mean, you know, we certainly did our fair share of consuming, and it was the idea of game management is to make sure that the game was not overhunted. Not underhunted, but it was a usable resource for food, and so now we're saying, well, it could be a usable resource for wildlife viewing, but wildlife viewing doesn't reduce the number of animals, so therefore we're not using it up. So why would the game board have to worry about how many pictures were taken of something? I mean, it doesn't. If we're going to manage towards That's kind of why we have parks, I guess. That's why I think we have a national park. I mean, we have a national park. We have the Denali. People go and they view the animals, but we don't hunt in the park. We don't do all those things. We go there because we want to see animals. We've already have that established to be what we're going to set aside for wildlife viewing, and we have other parks and so on. But. I don't know. I guess it doesn't make sense to me, I guess. And so I'm just having a hard time wrapping my mind around why they would take into consideration too much about the wildlife viewing so much, because it doesn't. I mean, that's a whole other way of approaching game policy.
Well, and through the chair, and I know we have to wrap up, but I just a couple examples, and one is the previous bill. I mean, the 5% of the people are seeing wolves now because the state is sort of complicit in the demise, in my opinion, of wolves that leave the Denali National Park. That's part of a policy. Now, under the new administration, there is going to be less federal control and oversight in the preserves and refuges. That's going to be put back on the state of Alaska at some cost to us, and I don't think there's been much discussion of that. But, you know, places like the Kenai Peninsula, where top federal biologists have said you can't take any more brown bear here. They cannot be sustained. I mean, I went to this meeting with biologist named John Morton, I think his name was, and the state's position was, no, we got this, it's fine, don't worry about it. And so the state generally sides with, frankly, the take, and rarely the non-take. That's what I observe.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow up. You know, you can disagree with the policy of how the allocations are made and so on, and you can disagree with game policy, but that's not the same as establishing a seat on the board. I mean, you know, I think anybody that doesn't get a moose might think that the game board could be, you know, maybe in their management area could be, maybe can be managed better, so their moose, you know, they got a moose. But that's, whether you disagree with their policy or not is not the same as saying that, well, we need now have to put someone that's really not into game management for a sustainable use of what I would consider the maximum benefit. It's just I just don't even know how you go there on this. So I can't doesn't make sense.
And excuse me, what we are going to do, in the interest of time, we've got other people over here. What we do have is we have another committee meeting tonight at 7. I am going to adjourn this meeting, and I apologize, Representative Parrish and Representative Drummond. However, we can address this later tonight. Out of respect, we did hold them up the last time because of electronic difficulties the last time. So with that, we're going to adjourn at 3:10 p.m.